You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic. I'm Cameron Lalana.
Oh, hey, I'm Matt Gerasimovich.
And today we are covering part two, chapter 25 of Vasily Grossman's life and fate, with the Shaposhnikov family now back in Moscow, settling into their cozy existence. Victor goes back to the Institute to celebrate once again his breakthrough on his project and talk to all of his old friends. Of course, Sokolov is there. He's always there. He's his old mentor, Chepizhin, and he's walking through the hallways ready to display his genius to everybody. He realizes the air's kind of been sucked out of the room by two other members, one of whom is not named, but is said to be a liaison of a sort, working in the scientific department of the Central Committee, whose name is not even said out loud. It's whispered into Victor's ear, I guess implying that he is a relative of someone fairly high up. When he is trying to explain his genius to others, this young man happens to take umbrage at Victor's assertion that a victory at Stalingrad is also a victory for freedom and Albert Einstein. And Victor decides, hey, look, let me explain to you, young man, why this is actually really important. And then Chepizhin and Sokolov are both there, just kind of slide out. And, you know, Victor's the type of guy who does not even notice. He doesn't have the tact to realize, hey, everyone else in the room is slowly backing away from me. Maybe this is a bad line of conversation, and continues through with that until they move back to the conference they're having itself, which doesn't go great for the progress of science, let's say loosely. Is there anywhere in this rather tense, although Victor doesn't realize it, conversation that you'd like to begin?
I think probably just on that fact that it's tense, but Victor doesn't really seem to realize it until it's too late. Until he's already gone so far that he can't come back from it. And I think that he had gotten so used to this situation when he was in evacuation, where you were not sort of within that formal power structure, and so you could say things that maybe weren't permitted, or weren't this, or weren't that, and there was a lot more lenience given. But now that we're back kind of in that formal institute, in the halls of the institute, it's not really accepted, and it seems that a lot of other people have the understanding of when to push the line and when not to, and Victor does not. And the time not to push it is when you have somebody liaising with the Central Committee coming to your institute. That sort of means that there might be a little bit of a power shakeup, and it seems that Victor doesn't quite sense that. But in his defense, the things that he's not sensing, I'm not sure that everyone else quite understands. I think they just know something's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah. And they that causes them to kind of round the wagons.
Yeah.
Basically on everything, which perhaps explains some of the lack of excitement there. I also wanted to go over to a comment from a similar one to one of our Discord users, Disco Barbello, who says, I'm feeling anxious for our Victor Pavlovich. Something I like about these chapters with the scientists is they complicate the idea of an entirely personal conformism or heroism within authoritarian systems. Victor's safety depends on the goodwill of people around him, their willingness to let comments slide and to keep quiet. You see this with Grekov too, and it's really interesting the ways people both encourage and suppress certain ideas together. Victor is funny though, because it seems like his budding anti-establishment tendency is directly connected with his sudden personal success. I do wonder how sincere he is, if the freedom he found in Kazan is something he's willing to stake his career and life on, or if he'll waver and toe the party line. But if I'm being more charitable, maybe he's had some kind of existential breakthrough along with his scientific discovery, and he is evaluating his society differently as a consequence. Oh, and also the follow-up point. It got me thinking that there, too, that there is a weird hope in systems like this. We focus on the denunciations and everything, but we don't think about all the people who didn't denounce their friends, families, neighbors, and coworkers. In a way, society is only possible because of people like that. It is kind of passive resistance that maybe doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, it does bring me back to that line again from a few chapters ago. I can't remember who was talking. Oh, who was he talking about? I can't remember who it was, but just this line, you know, he's got such a nice face. I'm sure he never denounced any of his friends. That one just still sticks out to me, even still, as sort of the inversion of what you would It's just that, I don't know, just such an inverted sort of perception of each other in the world. And yes, I'm not going to give away Victor's story arc at this moment, but it will be something that I think people are picking up on the correct tension for him. And the question is not so much what does he do, but maybe how responsible is he for his actions? And that's another question that I think Victor himself is going to be reconciling throughout the rest of the book.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to focus in on that latter end of the conversation too, of this idea of the denunciations that are not just the ones that are made, but as you said earlier, the ones that are not made, the type of person who never would denounce someone. Although I guess a corollary there is also the unintentional ones, the people who are maybe just not savvy enough not to realize what they shouldn't say, as is the case with
I think that's a more important thing, because we're going to see that in the next like two or three chapters, and like how it works, I think, without people getting killed over it per se at the moment. But it's going to come back, that sort of I didn't know I was incidentally denouncing someone,
right?
Yeah, that's a really important feature as well.
Yeah, not to say anything, but certain things that certain people said may have bad consequences for Krimov in particular.
Yeah, I may have let a few things slip to Apple Podcasts about Cameron, and you may not see him for a few weeks.
Well, I'll go ahead and prepare for that on my way out. Luckily, I keep my bag packed in my car for just such an occasion. And continuing along with that line, I also wanted to bring in another reader comment from Reagan this time, who says, "I didn't even think about passive resistance by letting things slide. It's impossible to measure how many people didn't get arrested because of goodwill from friends and family, especially at their own risk. If someone made a comment that could be reported in front of a group, all of the people would need to let it go. It also highlights how capricious the system can be, depending on how someone is feeling that day. A comment, or in Victor's case, many comments, may get someone arrested. I feel like Grossman always highlights how difficult it is to live inside a totalitarian system, especially since we're humans who may put our foot in our mouths sometimes."
I think that an important thing to remember is how much of this is really left up to chance, because there are so many people in the book who will get denounced or moved from positions or ultimately killed for far less than what Victor has said. Victor has said quite a lot at this point in the book. And, you know, in this chapter, the next chapter, he continues to say things where it's like, will you just stop talking? Just 1 minute of your life, stop talking.
Yeah.
Just stop. Do everyone a favor. Stop.
For once in your life. Just don't say anything.
All I can kind of be left thinking of is the sort of one of the last lines of this chapter, last two lines of this chapter. The physicists learned with surprise that they themselves were dissatisfied with the projects of their institute. Too much attention, apparently, was being given to purely theoretical matters. Suskov's words, "The institute is cut off from life," were whispered around the hall. And I think that is such a good encapsulation and place to leave the sort of thought process of what it is like to live in a totalitarian system. And I agree with you that there has still, I think, not been quite enough attention paid to the nuances of living within that society, because it sounds so silly to kind of say, well, in the face of so much destruction and death and everything, to say, well, think of how many people weren't killed by everybody not saying something, right? It's a complete inversion of the way that we completely tend to think of totalitarian systems. And I think that this was a great end to this chapter, and I wanted to highlight this word apparently, because this comes back again in a few chapters and has to do with the way that information is transmitted to us as the reader through gossip or through the sort of social interlinkages in a way that is not directly from the narrator. It's very interesting. Not so much here, but coming back to it, just bookmark that.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, that's a pretty much a long episode for you, I think.
balances out yesterday's.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in that case, you will hear from us again. Maybe longer, maybe shorter. We'll see soon.